It is always a pleasure to be here. Rabbi Kelman, Laser, Dr. Goldstein, everybody has put together such a wonderful, chock full of Torah and halacha weekend of learning that I'm just thrilled to be back again. And Yitz Hashem, Rabbi Kelman, Dre, you should just be go mechaya l'choya. What a wonderful, beautiful zolcha to continue putting on such symposium. Let's see how we get this to go forward. I can press every button.
Anybody good at this kind of thing? Where's the machine?
Ah, there we go.
I think Cornelius' machine.
Okay. Why do we need such a shiur? Alternative medicine, is it really an alternative? What's the purpose of having such a shiur? So I think it's a very important subject. We're under a tremendous amount of pressure from the beauty industry to try and stay and look healthy and young. Now, the staying healthy is certainly kehalocha. Looking young, I'm not sure that that's kehalocha. We view this white beard that I have as a sign of great sagacity and of being Baruch Hashem, a person who is following what the Torah says, to grow old, and zikna is a positive thing, which is connected what society says. So the pressure to stay healthy, certainly kahalacha, young at heart, that's kahalacha too. We try to do anything to regain our health when we're sick, and that means anything. People, unfortunately, are preyed upon when they're sick. I can't tell you the number of stories that I personally have been somewhat involved in. Where families come to me and say, listen, if we go to this place and we pay them $25,000, they're going to cure my incurable cancer. And there's an industry out there that is, unfortunately, I think, very often preying on people that are sick. You often have anecdotal reports of success stories, or, do you know my cousin Sadie's nephew? What happened to him? He had the same thing as you do. And he took this pill and he's better. There's a tremendous amount of the lay press that's devoted to all of these cures and alternative medicine therapies that you just have to try. And unfortunately, sometimes people say, what have I got to lose? There's no medical therapy that's proven. So this guy says he can cure me, so why not? And the bottom line, the real reason why I think we're having such a shiur is that this is a tremendous industry. And that's an important point for people to realize. Huh. No? How'd we do that? Okay, so let's... You won't have the full screen. I don't know how to get it back to full screen. Here's the pointer up there. Very good. In any event, I'll keep on talking while we fix that up. This is a big business. This is, if you go to the, I'm not sure I can progress this easily. If you go to the next slide, please. Okay. We spend a ton of money in the United States on all of these alternative therapies. And the most popular products available today are fish oil, glucosamine, and a whole bunch of others that are of, at least from a pure, objective, scientific point of view, of no proven value. Not to say that there's not interest, not to say that there's potential. But what I'm talking about today is therapies that are not yet of proven value from a medical, objective, scientific point of view. And if you look at some of the stuff that's out there, there's huge amounts of money spent on all these complementary medicines, alternative medicines, and there's a lot of people that are getting paid to provide those therapies. And if you just look, this is an old slide. I want to contrast in a moment. This is 10 years ago. How many people in the United States are using this? In the United States, we're not that bad. Only half the people, roughly. In Canada, our good friends up north, you guys use 70%. I mean, 70%, 7 out of 10 people. If I'm talking to a room, the majority of you are using some sort of an alternate therapy.
That's why we're so healthy.
So that's an important point to remember. This is a big business, and that has tremendous halachic ramifications. If you look at this comparison again between the 2002-2007 data, This is in terms of hundreds of thousands of people. Look at the bottom line over here. All these different sorts of therapies. Everything's going up. The actual numbers aren't important. But we're seeing more and more of such usage. And if you look at it by the different parts of the body, back pain, I'm unfortunately familiar with back pain right now. Back pain is the biggest one. People are constantly taking all sorts of alternative therapies because medicine is very, very poor in treating back pain. And I think personally that there's almost a direct correlation with an inverse correlation between how poor medicine is and the usage of these various alternative therapies. Where you have sound, solid, good proof that something works in medicine and it's relatively simple and straightforward, the alternative medicines really don't get off the ground. These are some facts. I don't think anybody can disagree with these facts that are up there. I think these are objective. And again, I have no axe to grind. I'm interested solely in what does the halacha have to say. Alternative therapies are based on pseudo-scientific or mystical principles. Otherwise, there would be standard therapies. That's not a knock. But that's a fact. They're not based upon hard science. As soon as they become proven or disproven, then they're scientific. By definition, all these alternative therapies are not assessed and evaluated in the normal scientific fashion. That's my definition. If something is, and I'm not calling that alternative therapy, they invariably do not have an explainable mechanism, or at least not one that I can understand. When you start talking about all these ideas of these energies and there's positive powers and negative powers, that's not scientific. It's a lot like Kabbalah. I don't have a clue what's going on over there. That doesn't mean that it couldn't be something real. They don't stand up to scrutiny and aren't controlled studies when they present their, quote, data. It would never make it into New England Journal of Medicine. It wouldn't make it into a second-tier journal. It wouldn't make it into a throwaway medical journal. They're not scientifically assessed. The reason why I'm so concerned about these is because of the bottom part of this list. They could be potentially quite dangerous. When we assess medicine, it goes through phase one and phase two studies. You have to prove that they're not dangerous almost before you can prove that they're efficacious. These alternative therapies have not been thoroughly investigated, and they have been shown in some cases to be in fact quite dangerous. Obviously, depending on the therapy. I'm not saying every single alternative therapy is dangerous. I'm saying I don't know until they're studied whether they're dangerous or not. And when you do see these anecdotal reports, you have to understand that the placebo effect is something that medicine clearly understands but doesn't fully understand. And if you give a bunch of people a sugar pill, a bunch of people are going to get better. That's the nature of human beings. That's the nature of psychology. That's the nature of sometimes the natural history of diseases. And therefore, you really need a controlled, prospective, randomized study as the gold standard to prove something works. Having said that, there are lessons to be learned from alternative medicine. They do some things that regular medicine doesn't do well, like talking to patients and sometimes holding their hands and sometimes giving them a little bit of TLC, which is a tremendously important idea. However, at this point in time, I'm talking today in the Shir about alternative medicines that do not have a scientific rigor to them, aren't really evaluated, and therefore have to be classified as not yet making sense. And I put in the word yet because I'm not so arrogant to say that we understand everything in medicine. And something that maybe years ago was scoffed at in medicine could today be standard practice of medicine. So the therapies that I'm going to talk about, la halacha today, are those therapies that are not scientifically investigated at this point in time. So, as with anything, we got to go to the text. So let's go look at your text you have in your packets. I don't know if it's going to be up over here. I don't think so. So you're welcome to go and look in your packets. They're not paginated, but it's towards the beginning of the packet. And it's not in the format that I sent it in. They were very kind and did it a lot nicer, but unfortunately, as a result, something's got a little bit out of order, and I want to make sure that everybody's following along with me. The top page of this shiur, oh, you do have it over here. The top page over here, nope, that's the end of life one. That's the end of life. No, this would be an alternate medicine PDF file if you do have it. If you don't have it, not the end of the world. my time is very limited, so we started a little bit late. I'm going to keep on time, but I want to make sure that everybody is following along. Again, this is really a shiur. This is not a talk about alternate medicine from a medical point of view. And what I really would like to go through is some basic sources and show you a tremendous machlokus amongst the Rishonim in terms of the halachic status of alternative medicine. And you really have to break it down into, can I take alternative medicine if it's keneged HaTorah, i.e. eat something treif, that an alternative medicine practitioner says, this is the cure for pancreatic cancer, which we in medicine say is essentially incurable. And he comes to me and says, take this piece of chazer flesh, eat it three times a day, and you will get better. Am I allowed to do something like that? Taking an isser, but because a practitioner of some sort says that it's going to be curative, we know pikuach nefesh is docha kol ha'tara kula, except for the three cardinal sins. So does that apply to an alternative medicine? The second question I think is much more interesting is, what happens if it's not keneged any isurim in the Torah? Are you allowed to take such a thing? If somebody were to tell you, go and bow down to this piece of Avodah Zarah, so you certainly can't do that. So is taking an alternative therapy essentially saying, I don't have emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I'm going to try this other thing? Is that a pseudo form of Avodah Zarah? Because it's not through natural, through understandable. So therefore, is that something that a person is allowed to do? So those are the two basic questions, and let's try to look at some of the... Oh, very good, you do got it, very good. So you can look up here on the big board. First pasuk from Yeshua. You have to scroll down if you can. I don't know if you can make that full page. Yeah, scroll down a little bit to the very end. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Nishmaitim od l'nafsho seichem. There's a commandment. This is Agavish from Nach. It's less well known. You have to watch your life. You have to save God's life. There's a mitzvah to take care of yourself. And if you look in the Metzudos over here, he writes down, he says, the marker over here is Bavur Kiyum Nafsho Sechem. Taking care of your physical body means you're taking care of your neshama. And the Rambam brings down over here, I know you probably can't see this, Shmiras HaGuf, Mevi L'Shmiras HaNefesh. If you take care of your guf, you're taking care of your spiritual as well. So when you all exercise on that treadmill, I don't want to say it's equal to the Daf Yomi, but you're doing something very good. It's a very positive thing that you're doing. Now, is this codified? Go to the next slide, please. Is this codified over here? The answer is yes. If you go read over here in the Rambam, if you go down to parts, I highlighted almost all the slides. If you're able to go down to the parts that are highlighted, that's always best. I know it doesn't come out so clear. You do have this in your packet if you want to follow along. It's just in a different format. The Rambam writes, V'chein kol michshol, sheyesh bo sakonos nefashos. Anything that you're doing that has a potential for danger in it, mitzvah sasei lahasiro, you have to remove it. You're not allowed to do something that is dangerous to you. You have to take care of your health. If you're taking in a product that is of potential danger and no proven value, that could be interpreted as being against this Rambam. And he brings down the pasuk from the Torah. The imloh hasir, if you don't stop this activity that is dangerous, and you leave those stumbling blocks in your path, they are potentially dangerous. What's the losase? So potentially taking a medicine that is of unclear value and has potential side effects could be classified here as an ase and a losase that you're being over. The Rambam further writes, the rabbis outlawed, prohibited various activities because they're sakonis nefashos. The chola omralein, if you go against what the rabbi said, are dangerous. And the definition of that is crucial. It's what the doctors say is dangerous. There's an unbelievable Gemara in the Yerushalmi that says that Shmuel, who was a doctor, used to have people carry him around because he said exercise is dangerous. I want to save my strength. Many of us believe in that philosophy. Take the car to the corner. That's connected medical advice today. So we don't paskin like that, because the Gemara, you don't paskin from medical advice. In fact, you're not allowed to follow the Gemara's medical advice. It is usur to follow the Gemara's medical advice. You have to follow the doctor's advice. Who says this? A modern Orthodox rabbi by the name of Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach Zatzal. You're not allowed to follow advice in the Gemara, and everybody agrees to that. I'm not aware of a single post that says you throw away your Harrisons, throw away Cecil, and follow this tractate in terms of how to treat disease. You're not allowed to follow the Gemara. So the definition of what is a proven therapy is based upon what the standards of medical practice say. And if somebody doesn't follow that, the chola over aleihem, the whole arini misakim biatzmi umali acherim. If somebody says, hey, I don't got a problem taking this medicine, what is it to you? What do you do to this guy? Look what the Rambam says. Makino so makis mardus. You beat him up. Because you're not allowed to do things that are dangerous. And if something is dangerous or potentially dangerous, you're just not allowed to do it because I willy-nilly think I'd like to do it. All right, this is the Rambam. We don't postulate like this necessarily. Well, let's go look in Shulchan Aruch. We pass it from Shulchan Aruch, not from Rambam. So you look in Shulchan Aruch on the next slide, the asterisk area there. Again, you have this all in your packets. I know it's a little bit discombobulating that you're going from a different format, but it's in your packets. I'm sure all of you tonight will be studying this and reviewing this, so it's in your packets. And Shulchan Aruch codifies this and says, "Kol ha'over avorim elu." I won't go through the whole thing again. He quotes the Rambam word for word. Ukayotzi b'hem, anything that the doctors tell you to do that's healthy, and you don't do it. I don't feel I have to exercise. I don't feel I have to eat right. I don't feel I have to take this medicine that my doctor ordered. So what is the din? Makinos amakas mardus. Shulchan Aruch says, beat him up. I wish I could tell my patients, you know, you don't take all 10 days of this strep treatment. You take 39 of those 40 penicillins and I'm coming to your house and beating you up. My compliance amongst my patients would go up astronomically. You're not allowed to do that, though. We don't do that in America. But in a pure, halachically defined society with the based in, they can tell you don't do things that are dangerous. And they got some koyach behind it to force the issue. But somebody does follow them. This is the end of Choshen Mishpat, by the way. So they always like to end on a positive note. Hanizar Bahem, Olav Tovo Brichas Tov. We're going to end the word with Tov. You follow the advice of the doctors, and you're going to, as the Rambam said, you're going to elevate yourself spiritually, and you're going to be successful. Let's look in Shulchan Aruch now, further in Shabbos, Shulchan Shabbos, and I have on Shabbos, I have a chance to go over some of this and discuss it in a little bit more detail. So I'm going to run through some of this quickly. We have a command. We can push aside Shabbos to do certain things. If you look in Oz Hey, in the Mishnah Brewer, he writes down, what is the definition of Mechalel Shabbos that you're allowed to do? And in Oz Hey, he writes, Ba'inan shetehei ha-refuah yidua le'anoshim ol al pi mumche, quoting the Magen Avraham. An expert has to say that this is a refuah. I can't go and do anything I want on Shabbos to take care of my sickness, for which I'm allowed to be Mechal Shabbos, because I would like to do this. I think it's really good. You need an expert, an objective expert, to say that you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for something. You just can't go and do this. Furthermore, the definition of Mechal Shabbos, if you go to the next Shulchan Aruch, a little bit later on in Sem Simon and Shabbos, he writes down over there, Kol Choli, the Mechaber writes, Kol Choli Sha'arofim, and this is Sif Yud, Kol Choli Sha'arofim Omrim Hu Sakana. The doctors have to define what is a Sakana, even though it's in a place that the Gemara didn't, Afal Pishu Al HaBosu B'Bachutz, the Gemara talks about Choli inside. So doctors today tell you have a superficial infection, it could be very serious. You get a phlebitis, it can lead to endocarditis, it can lead to a stroke, it can lead to death. We know that. So therefore, if you have such an infection, the doctors say you're allowed to treat that and be Mechal Shabbos, because the doctors say this is something that we know is an illness, so it's a sakana, or even a Sofek Sakana, and we can treat it on Shabbos Milchal Shabbos, because the doctors are Pirofim Mumchim. Now, here we have a major, major discussion. Where do we get this idea about these Rofim Mumchim? I'm going to skip around and go ahead because of my time. And you go look in the Gemara in Yuma on Pei Gimel. It's probably two or three slides. In your book, it's two or three footnotes down. Famous Gemara in Yuma that discusses it's a Mishnah, actually. We're learning. It's on Pei Gimel and Aleph. Mishnah Neshachol Kalev Shote, a rabid dog bites you. So their treatment at that time was, if you looked up in the original Harrisons, the original Harrison said the treatment was give him the liver of that rabid dog. So the Mishnah says, "Ein achil l'son michatzer kavod shelo." We don't do that because it's treif. The Chachamim, that's how they paskin. You can't give the person the rabid dog's liver. And Rav Masi ben Chorash Mati says you can. What's the argument over here? Why not? So Rashi on the spot says, even though there were practitioners at that time that said eating rabid liver dog liver is a very good treatment for what probably was rabies, even though that was the treatment at that time by doctors, it's not a proven therapy. So the fact that you can have a whole bunch of homeopathy convention doctors, PhDs, MDs even, DOs, whatever, saying that something is a therapy, Rashi on the spot over here says, ain't over for Gemurla Hatalo Isser Behematmeya. Because a whole bunch of people that look like they're doctors, sound like the doctors, might even be doctors, say something that's not proven, you cannot be Mechalel and Isser in the Torah of eating treif. Because a bunch of guys in white coats say you're allowed to. It's not biduka, it's not proven. All right, Rashi's great, great, great. Do we paskin this? So let's look at the poskim. Rashi's the classical darshan, the classical mufaresh. But we usually don't paskin necessarily like Rashi. So what is the Rambam? One of the pillars of Psak Halacha. So the Pirush Mishnayis, you just passed it, very good. The Pirush Mishnayis, and then we'll see it's codified in the Yad HaChazaka. The Rambam writes, ain't halacha ki Rabbi Masiv and Mecharish. We don't paskin like the Shita, the lone Tana, who says you can eat rabid dog liver to cure rabies. Because it's treif, and you're not allowed to be mechala. And here the Rambam, listen to this Rambam very carefully. Ki ze eino moil ela bederch skula. It doesn't work through natural laws of medicine. It wasn't in the Pumpadisa Journal of Medicine, in a double-blind prospective study, so it ain't making the grade of being over in Issur in the Torah. The Chachamim Sovereign, the way we paskin, the Rambam says, ki ain't over in our mitzvot ela b'refua bilvad. What's a lona? Now, in your Mishnah, Pirush Mishnayis, you have a different girsa than the one I have. I got the original in my hand. The Bar Ilan that you got it off, I don't know where they got that from. I'm reading you the original girsa of the Rambam. It's very similar. Russell Omar midvarin hamirapin biteva. You're only allowed to commit an isser to save somebody's life eating treif. If it's proven, if there's a New England Journal of Medicine study that says eating rabid dog liver is the cure for rabies, then hector gomer a mitzvah to eat that rabid dog liver. But if it's not proven in the New England Journal of Medicine, if it's not beduka by doctors, then you can't. Rambam says it has to be mirapin b'teva. It has to be a natural force, not powers and forces of energy. It's garbage. There's not a shred of scientific evidence. The Rambam is a scientist. The Rambam says you got to follow teva. Other Rishonim disagree. The Rambam says udov amiti, has to be true. Hotzia das, logical, vanisoyin, and tested. A double-blind perspective study. Rambam's way ahead of his time in many areas. Abul Hisrapos Bidvarm Shemirapin Biskulosan, to use alternative medicine. That's a skula. It doesn't work by any known mechanism. Asur! Kikokum Cholush, because they're weak. It's unscientific and Eino Mitzah Hadas. It has to be logical. You can't say, well, I think if I drink urine every day, I'm going to live to be 100, as do many practitioners in India. You can't do that in the Torah. The Nisyon HaRachok, and it hasn't been tested. Hitayna Chalusha, it's not scientifically sound. The Zeha Ikor, the Eyu V'Zichrei, the Rambam is giving you a little philosophy over here. You should know this. It's a standard principle of halacha. Ikur Gadol. Oh, okay, this is the Rambam and the Pirush and the Mishnayos. That's not halacha. So you go look up in Shulchan Aruch. In the Shulchan Aruch, and the Rambam himself, I don't want to re-quote you the Rambam inside, but Shulchan Aruch brings this down. You're only allowed to do this if it is appropriate. You look, I'm not going to go through the time. I'm running out of time. I won't go through all the sources in here, but I gave you the sources there to look up yourself. And the Vilna Gaon over here in the Bir Agra, the Shach over here in the Sisei Kohen, the Shulchan Aruch, Ramah, all say the same thing. Tzrichim shetei harufur yedua o al pi mumcha. Ve'in matim, reading the Ramah now, ve'in matim shum dvar isur l'chole im yuchel asol sefur beheter. So you got everybody who's everybody, agreeing to this. Is there anybody that disagrees? Are there any shitos that disagree with this somewhat? Well, there's, I'm jumping ahead a little bit for time constraints. If you go and look in the Mishnah and Shabbos seems to disagree with this. Mishnah and Shabbos, this is found on Daf Samach Zayin Omer Aleph. The Mishnah there says, Yotzin bebeitza sachargo ubishen shual ubimisamer min hatzolo ubishum refuah. On Shabbos, you can go out with the tooth of this chargo, a certain type of weasel, or the tooth of a fox, or some sort of a piece of wood from some sort of a solo of a bigger piece of wood. Mishum refuah. Mishnah seems to say none of these have any scientific basis to them. So you have Rishonim that say, not like the Ramban. You have the Ramban and the Rashba that say that if something is proven via segula to work, but proven is the key word over there, then they allow one to be mechalel, even in Issa Daraisa, as long as it's proven. So even though we don't understand how something works, this, to me, is very good for medicine. We don't understand how certain medications work. Oh, we're big shots. We think we know all pathophysiology. But we don't fully understand why some medicine works. But you know what? I don't need to understand true pathophysiology according to the Ramban and the Rashba. Because as long as it's proven, the double-blind prospective study showed that it clearly worked, I got no problem. Now, how does the Rambam and also the Ran understand this Mishnah? They say it's only for Nisa the Rabbonim. That this is talking about carrying over here in a Carmelis or carrying in a place where it's not an Issa Daraisa. And in that situation, through various pshetloch, they say that you go and even the Rambam would allow you to use this. So it's not a steer to the Rambam. But you basically have over here machlokas between the Rambam and the Ran. You could hear it in Rashi as well. And the Rashba and the Ramban that discuss whether it has to be understood scientifically or not understood scientifically, but proven. And as long as it's proven, you're okay. So bottom line, how do we paskin? So if you go look in the Chochmas Odom says, Kol cholesh yesh bo sakona, ubein ein bo sakona, shamachilu lo iser, sorech shetea rufua, yedua al pi mumcha. He says it has to be doctor proven. Has to be a mumcha, an expert in the field who says that this works. So, bottom line, if you want to go against an isser in the Torah, whether it's on Shabbos taking medicines, which is against the at least the Rabbanon, or on a weekday, if you want to do something that involves an isser, it has to be proven by doctors or other mumcha. Lav davka, you have to be a licensed physician. But if you have proven studies, then you would be allowed to do an iser in the Torah in order to go and take a treatment that involved going against one of the non-cardinal sins of the Torah. Cardinal sin in the Torah, you got to die. It's the only way you're going to heal is if you bow down to this Avodah Zarah. Then, even if that worked, even if it was proven that it worked, you have to die. you're not allowed to go take it. But for any but the three cardinal sins, you're allowed to go and take an Issa as long as it's proven by a Rofe Mumcha. So that's really question number one. What's more interesting, really, is question number two. What about if it's not going against an Issa in the Torah? Take this fish oil. No Issa in the Torah to take kosher fish oil. If you have products that are not kosher fish oil, so then you already start going into problems of Achshavei, do we consider such a thing to be a food item, and therefore it has to come from a kosher fish, or do we consider a pill not to be a kosher, not to be a food item, and therefore doesn't need a hechsher? It could even come from a non-kosher source. So that's a machlokas in poskim as well. We do seem to poskim, at least my rabbeim seem to poskim, that we don't consider it a food item, and you would be allowed to take a non-tasted, non-chewable, has no hanor the grono, you don't get any enjoyment when you swallow it. So we do seem to poskim that that's not called an isser. But there are poskim that say you shouldn't do that. And certainly I was always taught that if you have the choice of taking a one with a hechsher and one without a hechsher, they're essentially the same efficacy, for whatever that efficacy is, so it's better to take the one with the hechsher, and why get into this problem? But leaving that aside, it wouldn't appear to be an isser to go take it. But if you're taking a chewable pill that has a taste to it, or if you're taking a liquid that has a taste to it, or if you're taking something that's pure treif, and it's real treif, and it's, you know, they're telling you, you've got to have a certain amount of this item each day to get on our health plan in order to live to be 120, so then it's absolutely awesome to do that unless it is proven. And again, you see some of the sources that say this more clearly than I just did. But what happens if it's not asur? So if it's not asur, you can look in your day over here, and it says that, number one, you have another concept over here. He writes in Sinf Vav, this is in Yoredei Kufayin Tes, Mishenishacho Akrov, if you're bitten by a scorpion, Mutter Lilcho Sholov, you'll have to say incantations over it. I'll put that in more modern terms. You know, go to the practitioner and they hold your hand and they get the positive energy to get out the scorpion bite. Not about a zar. Because about a zar, now I do it. Absolutely not. Are you allowed to do something like this? L'lachay shalav, to say an incantation over it. So Shulchan Aruch says, she'ein adav me'el klom. It doesn't work. You want to do it. So no danger. Sitting there holding hands, man to man, let's assume you're not even getting involved in any surim over here. So you're holding hands with the practitioner of the same gender as you are, and they're saying abracadabra, whatever they're saying over there, and they're getting those positive energies, and they're thinking that they're curing you, and you believe it. Is there an issur in the Torah, issur in Shulchan Aruch, issur the Rabbanim to do this, or Shulchan Aruch paskins? Ho'il mesukenu, since you're in danger. Hey, Tiru, the rabbi said, you can do this if you really want to. K'vei shalot titarim daitoro, because if this guy can't go and get this cure, he's going to be very upset. Psychological pain, psychological suffering, and psychological distress is halachically recognized. There's absolutely isurim in the Torah that we allow you to violate. The woman who's going to hospital, Baruch Hashem, to give birth, is allowed to schlep her father, her husband, her mother-in-law, whoever she wants with her, in the car on Shabbos. Because that's going to be psychologically distressing to her if she does it, and she's going to potentially worsen. So this guy who is sick thinks that he's not going to get better because he doesn't do this voodoo, as long as it's not dangerous, because the danger part's important. So that's why I'm giving an example of holding hands. Albeit transfer MRSA into hands, we're not going to get into that. There's no risk, and there's no issa in the Torah, so Chazal did not asur it. Notice Chazal did not recommend it. Only it's going to get titarim daita. You're going to go crazy from this. It's going to bother you. Oh, I could be cured from my pancreatic cancer only if they let me hold this practitioner's hand. So he doesn't take. Hold it to your heart's content. He's going to charge you $10,000. You're a fool. And it's inevitable that they prey on such people. I can't tell you how many stories, as I said at the beginning, but people pray. It's a big business. I think there's a special place in Gehenna for such practitioners. I honestly do. I think that they're horrible people. Especially the ones that know that it doesn't work. I love listening to those commercials on the radio where they advocate, if you want better this, better that. And then at the end, the guy speaking at rapid pace, he said, this is not approved by the FDA, this is not a claim for anything medicinal. the end of it, the whole advertising, how wonderful this is, and at the end they must by law say, but of course nothing that we said is true. Why would anybody in their right mind do something like this? It's absolutely not allowable. So that's the bottom line. There's a lot more source material over here. We started a little bit late, so I'm taking my full half an hour, and I'm going to conclude over here at this point just to tell you, there's an absolute mitzvah to stay healthy, and everybody should do everything possible to stay healthy. The definition of that is a halachic definition. What is a refuah beduka? What is proven and tested? That's what a person should do. And anything else is certainly not recommended, and is potentially also to do. So I leave you with that little message, and at this point I have 5 minutes for questions. Thank you very much for listening. How can we allow what?
Smoking.
I give a separate talk on that. I think it's an absolute isser. Possibly or probably, according to all poskim, over the assay, including Rav Moshe, who everybody quotes as saying he never actually assed it. And I could go off on a diatribe about that. If you read his tshuva, which was written in 1964, which is the year the Surgeon General's warning came out, and then was subsequently updated, the data in Rav Moshe's tshuva, where he doesn't answer it, he says you're over an assay. He doesn't want to say you're over a los assay, based upon what he wrote in his tshuva, that it wasn't enough of a medical proof how dangerous it is. I think, Lania's dati, it's clear that based upon the medical knowledge today, Rav Moshe would change it around, but I don't like to put words into Gedolim's mouth when they're not alive to second them. So I'll only have to tell you that the Mishnah Berurah, the Chofetz Chaim, says that it's osur in one of his tshuvos. Rav Avadya Yosef, the Aguda convention last year said any Rebbe who smokes should be fired. It is, in my humble opinion, absolutely an isser over a los assay and assay to smoke. I think the vast, vast majority of poskim alive today second that in some way, shape, or form, if not as far as I just went. And Rav Moshe wrote that you absolutely shouldn't smoke. I would be much more interested in Rav Moshe's advice than I am in his pure halachic opinion. Because as they always say, when the Rambam writes, Ani Omer, that's a much stronger statement than when he writes, it says in the Gemara Mitzub is this. Because then you can disagree. There's a man the Omer that argues with him. When the Rambam puts his whole gestalt, he puts his entire Das Torah into a statement, Ani Omer, my Rebbeim always said, whoa, you don't want to argue with that. Rav Moshe wrote, don't smoke. And under certain situations, he wrote, it's an issur to smoke in a base medrash, in a place with other people, secondhand smoke, absolutely awesome. So I couldn't agree with you more.
The proof that we, there's really a consensus sometimes on many issues in conventional medicine. So the New England Journal of Medicine maybe are a lot better way back. But we all know that there's machlokas in the New England Journal as well, and the other prestigious journals. Sometimes you're talking as though there is this.
Absolutely, and one of the sources that I skipped discusses that when you have one Rofe saying one thing and one Rofe saying another thing, you're allowed to pick the Rofe that you want to follow for the medical advice. Halacha recognizes that there isn't a monolithic approach, 100%, but you've got to have people of standing. One of my Rebbeim, I remember this very clearly, said there was a Machlokes who was telling us over Machlokes V'shach and Taz. And somebody in the class got up there and said, I think the Taz is right. And the Rebbe said, I don't think the Shach lost any sleep just now. You have to be, Rav Shach Shlita always says, you gotta have a right to an opinion. We're not a democratic society. You don't automatically entitled to an opinion like you are in America. Every person, one vote. It's not the way it works in halacha. You have to be holding, as they say. You have to have a right to a halachic opinion. Just because your name is rabbi, or just because you're a learned person, or a very bright guy, doesn't mean you're entitled to an opinion. A rav who has a status is the right to a halachic opinion. And the same thing is true in this way, you'll have to with doctors. Yes?
Thank you.
Well,
I'm just wondering, the clinical trials, we have groups of people that
That's an excellent question. I'll repeat it for those that might have heard it. What about a clinical trial? You don't know. So the halacha sanctions doing that when there is no well-known and proven therapy that you're giving up. by taking this. So, for example, if I'll give you the example I gave before, taking the penicillin for strep throat to prevent rheumatic fever. That's why you take it, not to get better, as of course everybody here knows, because it doesn't get you better any faster. You're taking it to prevent rheumatic fever. So if I give you another therapy that is not proven to be as good as the gold standard, so that's a problem if I'm taking away something. So under certain situations, you wouldn't be allowed to enroll in such a study. But the vast majority of times that a study is done properly, halacha sanctions it, because usually there is no good alternative, or the expectations of this control drug versus the experimental drug are at least theoretically felt to be equivalent, if not the experimental drug being better. If you know for sure that it's not as good, you absolutely wouldn't be allowed to take it.
What about Shabbos?
So that's already an even more interesting question. Can you be Michal Shabbos for such a study? And the answer would be, if the risks are great enough, yes. For something that is a very simple thing, the answer would be no. And I'll actually be talking about that in my Shir on Shabbos. We'll look inside in the Piskei Tshuvos. We're going to go through a number of very interesting Tshuvos about taking certain medications on Shabbos. It'll be from the patient's point of view. Rabbi Steinberg Shlita will be giving one from the physician's point of view, not conflicting at different times. And I'll be giving one what the patient needs to know, what you're allowed to take as a teaser for you. Can you take Viagra on Shabbos? Not that that would apply to anybody here, you're too young. But that's very interesting questions that come up. As a Rav, I get these types of questions. Vitamins, all sorts of birth control pills, fertility treatments. Can you take them on Shabbos? They're not life-threatening if you don't.
Yes. Take one last question there at the back.
Halachically, can you refuse to take vaccination? What a great question. I wanted to give a shiur on that. That'll be next year in Mitzvah Shem. I just wrote a paper along with a number of very other Choshev Rabbanim. I think absolutely not. I think that the mumps outbreak that was 99% in the Haredi Frum communities of Borough Park, Muncie, and a number of other places, including Eretz Yisrael in England, 99% in the Haredi Frum community is the best reason why you absolutely, I think, have an obligation to get vaccinated. I think it's shmiras nefesh. Now, I'm not talking about every vaccination. Go take vaccines that are of dubious value. I'm against that, too. I'm an infectious disease person. I want you to be healthy, not sick. And taking a vaccine that's of non-proven value, I'm not in a rush to take it. But for something that the autism thing was just, it was so timely, the autism connection was just debunked. The British doctor who wrote it was just disbarred, the equivalent, dislicensed, I don't know what the word is, in England, because he made up the study. It was Sheker, the Hevel, and he admitted it, and he was just lost his license in England. And that's why people never are dying, because, oh, it causes autism. It's just not true. And if you have something, in my opinion, and I'll tell you, I'm not sure that every post-it agrees with this, but if you have something that's a Viduka therapy that involves such minimalistic risk to a person and such great benefit, Baruch Hashem, nobody has polio. I have friends. One friend is in a wheelchair to this day because she got polio in 1956 or 57, right before the polio vaccine came out. To this day, she's still in a wheelchair. And I'm sure everybody here knows other people as well like that. And these are preventable diseases, and I think it's a shanda that somebody doesn't get vaccinated because they're following what is incorrect medicine. That's my humble opinion. I think there's halachic backing for it. Certainly as an infectious disease expert, I couldn't recommend something more. The only thing ever proven to prevent any illness is vaccines. Nobody dies from smallpox today. There's not a single other disease in the world we've eradicated.